The train burst through in a blast of black smoke. Go! We half ran, half slid down the mountain, and plunged into the coal smoke. The black cloud invaded my lungs and my nose, blinded my eyes, so I went sprawling. I was back up and jumping before I had time to feel the sting of the skin stripped from my elbow. The moment it was stone below my feet, the next it was air. The whole world was suspended. My feet hit the roof of the train unsteadily, and I slid, panic wrapping me up as I fell toward the edge. A hand was around mine, grabbing me. Jin hauled me back up. There was no room to thank him over the deafening noise of the train. I tightened my fingers around his for a moment. Then we split, his hand tearing out of mine. Shazad and I bolted for the front of the train, Jin, Bahi, and Hala for the back. I didn't look down, not at the rails rushing below us, not at anything, until we were as close to the front as we could get without climbing into the engine. I eased myself down first, toward the door that would take us inside, clinging to the outside of the train as it tried to shake me off with every rattling movement, the air howling around my ears. Shazad landed next to me with the grace of a cat. I checked the pistol on my belt as her hand closed over the handle of her blade. Terror and excitement battled for my attention. Everything I was feeling was mirrored straight back at me from her eyes. We turned as one. The door of the carriage burst open under our feet. Rows of empty seats stared back at us. Dusty glass hurricane lights juddered quietly from the motion of the train. Shazad and I lowered our weapons. One of the windows was shattered, a table overturned. Wordlessly, we moved forward, my finger on the trigger. My other hand rested on the spare gun on my other side. We moved through the train together, one empty carriage at a time. Halfway, Shazad gave voice to the fear that had started to grow in my mind. The others should have made it this far by now. I flexed my grip around my gun and wished for something to shoot at. When we wrenched open the next door, a gap an arm's length wide stretched before the next carriage. Standing on one side of it, I thought it seemed as wide as the Dev's Valley. I couldn't look down. I wouldn't look down. Not with the rails rushing by in a blur below. But we had to keep going. We needed to find the weapon before it found us. Step back, I told Shazad, storing my gun away. I'll go first. She didn't have time to argue. I grabbed the door frame, swung myself backward, and flung my body forward. The wind whistled in my ears, daring me to fall. I crashed into the other carriage. The door didn't give. I stumbled, my arm lashed out. I was grappling through thin air as my heart threatened to drop into my stomach and take my whole body straight into the rails with it. My hand closed around something solid and metal. A ladder to the left of the door. I heaved myself upright, shaking as I clung to the cold metal bar. All I could see were my hands and the metal. Shazad shouted something I couldn't hear over the wind. I turned as far as I could to grab onto her hand. Her fingers were on the edge of my eyesight, stretching for me. The door clattered open. All I saw was a golden uniform that looked like my death. But Shazad was faster than death. She dove across the empty space. I caught the flash of a knife in her hand, and then red across gold and white. If the soldier cried out before he went under the rails, it was lost in the drone of the train. I didn't see him die. All I saw was Shazad landing too hard on her ankle, her foot giving out below her, the wind grabbing her dark hair, tying it around her neck like a noose, her eyes catching mine as she fell toward the rails. Chapter 23. For the longest moment of my life, There was nothing but air between my fingers. Then my hand clamped over Shahzad's wrist. Relief engulfed me as her other arm swung up and her fingers latched onto my arm, like some greater force was drawing us together. One of Shahzad's feet caught on the narrow ledge, just enough for me to keep hold of her. Her weight battled between my grip and gravity as she tried to pull herself out of the dangerous backward lean that could turn into a fall if either of us loosened our grip. My fingers shook with the will to not let go. She was shouting something that the wind carried away. "I can't hear you," I screamed back.
"More of you?"
There was another voice on the air, like something spiraling out of a dark dream. I'd forgotten about the open door and the uniforms behind it, my back exposed to them so they could put a knife through it any second.
"We're practically invaded."
I knew this voice, sharp and northern and threatening to put a bullet straight through Tamid's leg, holding me at gunpoint, speaking to the Galen general in Fahali. Commander Naguib's laugh swirled on the wind. My eyes locked with Shahzad's. I couldn't look away, not even a little bit, not without letting her slip. The rails rushed by below her scrabbling feet, her shima loose and whipping violently in the air. My arm trembled, trying to pull her back to standing. But Shahzad could see everything. She could see behind me straight into the carriage. She just didn't have the gun.
"Someone drag them in," Naguib ordered lazily.
Shahzad's eyes went to the gun on my hip and then over my shoulder. I knew exactly what she wanted me to do. I could pull my gun, swing around, and put a bullet straight into Naguib's head. Only I couldn't do it without dropping her. "Let me go." Her lips shaped the words into the air. She was willing to kill and die for this cause, because if Commander Naguib didn't die, we were all dead. From somewhere deep inside me, I saw Tamid's face. I wasn't that girl anymore, the one who left people. My hand tightened on her wrist. Arms grabbed my waist, dragging me backward, carrying Shahzad with me as we were piled into the safety of the carriage. Well, safety wasn't exactly the word. Hands searched me for weapons. I pressed my forehead into the carpet, panting while they scoured my body. My legs were shaking so badly, I couldn't have stood or fought anyway. It took Shahzad's hand on my elbow to help me up. We were in one of the luxury private carriages. It was filled with neat uniforms and our own battered rebels. I counted about a dozen soldiers. Two of them were holding Jin. He was on his knees and he looked like he was struggling not to slump onto the floor. But he gave me a weak, rueful smile, which I tried to return. Hala had a gun to the back of her head, arms tied behind her. At first I didn't see Bahi, and for one stupid second I hoped he had been smart enough to get off the train. Then I recognized him, shirt red at the collar from the blood gushing out of his nose. He barely looked like himself. And standing by the polished wooden bar, like the host of some demented party, was Naguib.
"Well, this is a sorry little mission."
His attention skimmed over me, then veered back.
"And if it isn't the blue-eyed bitch, not allied with the traitor, you said?"
"Circumstances have changed." I picked words Shahzad would say, nice and sharp and clean, because if I used my own, they might get me shot. "Nothing quite like a gun to the head to make you join the other side, Commander."
"I'm sure."
Naguib stepped away from the bar in that unnatural, nervous gait.
"And I'm sure my brother here was very persuasive."
His foot lashed out into Jin's ribs on the last word, doubling him over onto the thick red carpet. I didn't react. I wouldn't give Naguib the satisfaction.
You know, he straightened his cuffs, you might as well tell me where the other would-be usurper of a brother is now and spare yourself a lot of misery. After all, I have 7 of you, and I only need 1 of you to talk. In fact, I only need 1 of you alive at all.
He touched the pistol at his hip.
You're obviously a very poor gambler, Shahzad said. I reckoned it was her accent that made Naguib finally notice her.
Shahzad al-Hamad?
Shahzad batted her eyes at him like we really were guests at a party.
You'll forgive me. Have we met?
His expression curdled.
Of course. I wouldn't expect the great general's only daughter to notice one of the Sultan's many sons, though many of us noticed you.
I noticed the sons that mattered, Shahzad replied coolly. I watched the words slice through Naguib, the commander, hitting the boy underneath.
Your father will hang for this, you realize, which is fine with me, since my father has promised that I will be general when he's gone.
Naguib reached for Shahzad's face.
All thanks to you. But I think I'll deal with you. If you hurt her, you will burn in hell.
Bahi's voice was thick from the blood clotting his nose. If you don't believe me, the Demji will tell you. I realized he meant me.
She can't tell a lie.
Naguib's gaze went to me, finally seeming to take in my strange eyes.
It's true.
I spoke without hesitation. Bahi had warned me not to do it, not to bend the universe by making truths. But now he was asking me to, for Shahzad, to keep her alive and safe.
Touch her and you'll die screaming.
The second the words fell out of my mouth, they were true.
With Bahi's warning, I'd thought it would feel different, that power would surge out of me as I felt my words rearrange the universe to make Shahzad safe.
But that was the danger. They were just words. They slipped out easily, like any other words.
Begging for your life.
Naguib's fingers stopped just short of Shahzad's chin, wary at whatever game we were playing. Bahi caught my eye.
Lying is a sin, after all.
Jin snorted. A laugh burst from my lips, even with the gun to my neck.
What would you know about sins?
A hollow voice spoke from a corner, cutting off my laughter and sending a slow, cold finger down my spine. I squinted into the dark, where all I'd seen was piles of weapons and helmets. Then one of the old-fashioned suits of armor moved. The man was made of pure metal. Bronze chainmail hands rippled when his fingers flexed. Bronze joints clicked when he walked. Even his face was a smooth mask of copper that caught the sun that blazed through the train windows. I didn't like the way the soldiers gave him room, as if they were scared of him.
Sit up straight, preacher boy.
The metal lips didn't move when the man talked, but a hollow voice echoed inside the mask, tainted with an accent that sounded an awful lot like he was from the last county. Bahi struggled to raise his bloody face until 2 guards forced him up against the wall, slumped and barely standing. The bronze man reached out and took Bahi's hands, one of them tattooed, the other blank. The metal man tilted his head like a curious bird. As he did, I saw the sliver of skin at his neck. Not a metal man, then. A man dressed in metal.
Norsham,
Naguib said on the edge of giving an order.
Norsham.
And then I was standing back in Vahali. In the prayer house turned prison, a boy with a slightly uneven smile chained up to a wall.
I'm special, he told me.
Through the slits in the copper, all I could see was blue. Blue like the desert sky, like the oasis water. Blue like my own eyes.
You are a traitor.
Norsham's voice was distant as he turned his burning blue gaze back on Bahi. So far removed from the desperate, hopeful tone when he'd helped me. I strained against the soldier who held me.
Traitors should be returned to the arms of God for judgment.
He raised one bronze hand and rested it flat against Bahi's forehead like he was blessing him. Bahi smiled through bloody, swollen lips.
Sorry to disappoint. I think I've strayed too far to find my way.
And then he was screaming. Chazad cried out his name. Before I could move, heat rolled across the carriage in a violent, suffocating wave as I watched the hand against Bahi's forehead turn as bright as an ember. Bahi's skin sizzled and blackened as we all cried out. The hold on my arms broke. I was two steps to Bahi before the heat was too much. I fell to my knees, gasping. Bahi's skin turned black and then white. I watched helpless as he turned from a boy into ash. We'd found our weapon.
Chapter 24. The heat vanished. My skin felt fevered. My lungs burned. I was on all fours, gasping for air, my heart going in time with the rattling of the train below me. Bahi was dead. He died screaming, just like I'd said Commander Naguib would. I'd bent the universe and turned the harm away from Shazad straight into Bahi. The carriage had gone still now, except for the chandelier above us, slightly singed, swinging frantically from side to side with the motion of the train. Jin surged forward. One of the soldiers holding him shoved a knee into his spine, forcing him to the ground.
Restrain him!
Naguib was doing his best to sound bored, but there was a waver in his voice. His hair was stuck to his skin with sweat. Hala let out a small sob without moving.
Might I suggest my esteemed foreign brother is next?
But Norsham ignored his commander.
Amani.
All his attention belonged to me.
You're still alive.
I didn't understand him at first. And then I realized my clothes were charred, blackened, and burned away in places. Only I wasn't. My skin was Ademji's. Daughters of immortal things didn't burn easily. I grew up in the desert. My voice shook. I know heat.
No.
He reached down a metal hand like he might touch my face. I could feel the heat radiating off it.
You're special. Like me.
And it was true, right down to our accents and blue eyes. I couldn't tell him it wasn't. We were both Demji. We weren't made for lies.
I want to be alone with her.
He raised his voice so Naguib could hear him.
Like hell!
Shazad was unraveled on the carriage floor, but with those two words I knew she still had some fight in her.
Couldn't have said it better.
Jin was struggling back to his knees. Naguib's boot connected with his side again.
Nobody hurts them,
I shouted as Naguib raised his foot again. He stopped, his boot hovering above his brother's ribs. He wasn't a commander with a prisoner then.
He was a son who wasn't allowed to compete for his father's respect at the Soul Team trials. Who couldn't command his soldiers' respect and heard behind his back that his rebel brother was a better man than him. And he was taking it out on Jin.
I'll come with you. And while I'm gone, nobody hurts them.
I turned back to the pair of blue eyes set deep in the metal face. Were mine that unsettling to look at?
We got a deal?
His eyes smiled, but the metal mouth never moved.
I wondered if he'd grown up stupidly ignorant of what he was, just like me.
You've got my word. No one will hurt them while you are gone.
He held out his hand again. It didn't matter that I was a genie's daughter. His metal glove still made my palm blister when I clasped it. They searched me twice before they left me alone with him, but they did it hastily. I got the feeling even the soldiers were dying to get away from their Demji weapon. Then we were alone in the next carriage over, a large dining car. It looked almost exactly like the one I'd eaten in on the train out of Juniper City. Every motion of the train made the glasses clink like a manic chorus of bells. Norsham sat in a bright red chair while I leaned against the door, as far away from him as I could get.
You didn't come back, he said finally. In Fahali, you didn't come back for me.
He sounded younger than he had in front of Nagib, and for a moment, the terrifying bronze armor blurred back into the scrawny soldier boy on the floor of the prison. I meant to. I wanted to. I tried, but...
I was making excuses.
A lot of excuses for a broken promise, made when I thought we were both just children of foreign men, not a defective Demji and a weapon of destruction.
I know, I said finally.
I'm sorry.
How come you were locked up? I asked. I wouldn't obey my commander's orders.
The prayer house, I realized. You wouldn't burn the prayer house into Sama.
He inclined his head slowly.
How come?
I remembered his disgust at Bahi.
Don't believe anyone holy enough to be at prayers could be a rebel?
I knew there wouldn't be any Galen inside, he said simply.
The Galen?
I shook my head in confusion.
Why would...
Dasama hadn't just been allied to Ahmed. It had been a major base for the Galen army. The Sultan wasn't trying to burn out the rebellion on behalf of the Galen. He wasn't using it as a testing site because it was rising in support of Ahmed. He was scouring the foreigners out of his desert.
You're not after us. You're after them.
The Sultan told me that God was angry that we'd let faithless foreign powers into the desert. He said he needed me to return our land to our people. My fire could clean out the foreign armies, the ones that would harm us, control us, and take from us what isn't theirs.
Who marched in with their blue uniforms and took women and guns alike from this desert. I thought of standing in the tent with Ahmed, scared his father was coming for us. How stupid and naive. The Sultan didn't care about a handful of rebels wanting to make a better world. He was making a new world, too. One he didn't have to share.
Something flashed outside the window. Blue wings. A huge blue rock.
Is circling above the train. He must have realized something was wrong by now.
Norsham followed my eyes just as Iz flung himself upwards, darting over the top of the train and out of sight.
You're from Sazi,
I said, drawing Norsham's attention back to me.
I pushed myself away from the door and started pacing, keeping his eyes on me. Just because we told the truth didn't mean I couldn't fool him.
I can hear it in your accent. The mines.
The pieces were starting to come together. The way the burnt city reminded me of something I couldn't put my finger on. Two great disasters separated by the desert.
It wasn't an accident. It was you.
I destroyed the mines on the day I discovered my gift. He stood up with the same ponderous motions as a holy father. The day I brought light and wrath down on the wicked.
And Sazi was wicked, was it?
I traced my finger down the wood of the bar. So long as I was here, my friends stayed alive. So long as I was here, I could buy us some time. I just had to keep him talking. When I glanced out the window, Iz was gone. How long would it take him to figure out we were in trouble?
"You're from the last county, too," he said. "How good were people where you were from?"
He wasn't wrong. "You've killed more people than anybody in the last county ever did."
Norsham spread his hands, and the tightly woven chainmail caught the light. "I was chosen for greater things. This is my purpose."
I recoiled. Greater things. It sounded too close to things I'd said to Tamid about leaving Dustwalk, about there being another life out there, one that wasn't so small and pointless and short. The things I'd thought in the rebel camp. I could share an accent with someone who killed so gleefully, but I wasn't willing to share my words.
"What did they do to you, anyhow? The wicked folks of Sazi?"
For a second, even made of metal, he looked human.
"Do you remember 7 years ago, when the Gallen army came through?"
His fingers tapped out a rhythm on the bar as he walked toward me. "The Gallen army came through more than once," I said. I didn't dare move away from him.
"Don't you pretend you don't remember."
His accent stumbled, and I heard the last county thicker than ever. His tongue righted itself again.
"This time was different."
"I remember," I admitted, even though I didn't want to. It was a drought year. The restlessness went bone deep, and there were more of the foreigners in their blue uniforms than usual. My mama and I hid under the house for a whole day. She tried to make me think it was a game, but I was old enough to understand some of why. Norsham nodded.
"My sister, Rabia, was old enough, too," he said. "And when the army was gone, folks up on the mountain got together and tossed stones at her and all the other girls for lying with foreign men, until they were lying dead. And my mama let them."
I had nothing to say to that.
"For years I waited for God to punish them. I prayed. I'd never figured the punishment would come from me."
His words reminded me of the Holy Father's voice blistering through the masses on prayer days. I even used to hear the wild religious fervor on Tamid's tongue sometimes.
"I had been out of the mines for a while. I was too sick to work. I tried to go, but my mama wouldn't let me, and I didn't have any fight in me. When I came back, all the other men were looking at me sideways. They kept asking after Suha, my other sister. By lunchtime, one of them got drunk enough to tell me. While I'd been sick, we'd run low on money. And my mama had been afraid of starving to death, so she sold Suha as a whore to the men in the mine. The same ones who'd killed Rabia for lying with foreigners. And as I found out, I felt it all rush out of me. A light sent from a higher power, destroying them and leaving me whole."
"Like hell." Noorsham stopped pacing a foot away from me. The unchangeable features of his bronze mask were calm, but one single bronze fist was clenched tightly in anger. I felt the anger with him. For the folks in Dustwalk who had hanged my mother, who had hanged Dalala, who would have let someone like Fazim or my uncle have me. After that, Prince Naguib found me. I had been huddled on the mountain awaiting my next order from God, and he came. And he took me to our exalted Sultan, who explained to me that my fire was a gift, that it would kill the sinful and spare the worthy. Fire doesn't know good from evil any more than a bullet does. I couldn't stop myself. He tilted his head like a puzzled bird. "You're still alive," he said. "That ought to be proof enough." I leaned back against the bar, hiding my shaking hands as I gripped the edge. "And I reckon you know it, too. Why else did they have you all chained up in Fahali? How come they've got you all trussed up in your armor now? I reckon you know as well as I do, being from the last county. We put bronze in with the iron to make the Buraki obedient." The Galan army that was hunting for the rebel camp was stationed in Dasama. They had meant to burn that, too, only Noorsham wouldn't, so they had taken him back to Isman, and they had made him bronze armor. "Seems like he thinks you need to be made to obey, too. You want to know what I think? Naguib's afraid of you." And I couldn't blame him. "He's just using you. You're a common weapon." Norsham's fingers twitched. "You sound real sure of yourself." "Because I'm right." I grasped for something to say, some truth I could give him. There was no point telling him he was a Demji, not a weapon of God, or that he was fighting for the wrong side. He could say the same to me. He believed in the Sultan. I believed in the rebel prince. Jin had told me once there was no arguing against belief. It was a foreign language to logic. And Genie's daughter or not, I reckoned he could still burn me alive if he decided I was on the other side. I needed to get out of here. I shoved myself off from the bar and paced to the window. I could still see Iz flying high above. The window came open with a tug, letting cool air in.
"What are you doing?"
"I'm hot," I said, pulling my shima free from my neck. I released my red shima, stolen off a clothesline in Sazi, letting it whip out into the sand like a bloody flag. I prayed Iz would see it and understand.
"Is this a trick?"
He sounded so young again. "You don't have to let them use you." My voice took on a desperate note as I turned back to face him. "Prince Ahmed, if he were Sultan, he could expel the Galan too, without killing so many people. He has people like us on his side too. Only he doesn't use us to raise cities. We're not weapons, we're soldiers."
"I'm not a weapon," Noorsham said.
Maybe Jin was right. Maybe there was no arguing with belief. I looked out the window again. Iz was lower now, keeping pace with the train. "So how come," I asked, steadying myself against the bar, "you can't take the armor off?" His fingers flew to the clasp on the side of the mask that was welded shut, just as Iz, in the shape of a giant rock, flung himself at the train. The train rocked sideways so hard I thought we might tip straight off the rails. It crashed into the bar, knocking the air straight out of me. I heard metal tear, and from the corner of my eye I saw a piece of the carriage wall ripped away in Iz's razor talons. I bolted to the narrow opening,
desert sprawled on all sides. Then a shape in bright desert clothes launched herself into the sand. Shahzad landed in a practiced roll on her feet before she vanished from my sight, two soldiers following her out. A golden girl grappling with a soldier hit the sand next. The door banged open. Nagib rushed in, coming to find Noorsham. I moved with the sort of speed that usually belonged to Shahzad, reaching across the bar. My hand fastened around the neck of a bottle. I turned, swinging it, narrowly missing Nagib's face. He grabbed my wrist, wrenching it downward. I felt a shot of pain through my whole body and screamed. The bottle shattered against the ground, distracting him long enough for me to pull free. Someone called my name. Jin was standing in the doorway. A huge hole torn in the train separated the two carriages. But damn him, was he thinking of coming for me? Go! I shouted at him. I'll be right behind. He knew better than to argue with me. He jumped as I started to run for the tear in the side of the carriage. I wasn't far behind him, my arms bracing either side of the gap in the wall. Noorsham. I glanced backward. He'd been knocked sideways by the blow. There was a dent in the metal helmet he wore, but he was righting himself. I glimpsed through the gap that we were coming up on a canyon where the rails crossed over the chasm. I had to jump. Now. But I couldn't leave Noorsham. I couldn't leave him alive. I couldn't leave him here in Nagib's hands. I had to kill him. Or save him. Our blue eyes locked across the debris littering the carriage. The noise inside me sounded like Bahi's scream, begging me to cross the carriage and rip off his mask, drag him away. But the valley was almost under us. I might have already waited too long. If I went back, they'd have me trapped, and there wouldn't be time to jump. If I jumped now, I might go over anyway. I was damned either way. I flung myself through the rip in the carriage. The wind caught me, tossed me. I hit the ground, and my body exploded into a constellation of pain. Momentum carried me through the sand as easily as if it were air. I was in too much agony to fight it. My vision cleared just in time for me to see the canyon gape open to swallow me. My empty fingers scraped through the sand. I fought for purchase that wasn't there to stop my body. There was nothing to cling to but sand. My legs went over, taking the rest of me with them. Chapter 25. My fingers caught on something. I felt a tug of falling in my stomach as I willed my injured hand to hold on. My body swung against the canyon wall, and I heard my ribs connect with the sickening noise of bones breaking. I cried out, agony taking me over. For a moment, all I could do was hang, eyes shut, breath shallow, telling myself not to look down, willing my hand to hang on. Only then I realized I didn't know what I was holding on to. I was shaking so hard I could barely move. It seemed like it took forever to open my eyes. I tipped my head back slowly, like any movement might throw me off balance and send me hurtling to the bottom of the chasm. I grabbed hold of the sand. Or rather, the sand had grabbed hold of me. An arm made of sand had clamped around my wrist. It was holding on to my life. I dropped my head, squeezing my eyes shut, trying to remember how my lungs ought to work, how fast my heart ought to beat. I'd seen dozens of things born from the sand and the wind and the spirits in the desert in my 16 years. I'd heard every story about immortals and ghouls alike that came from the sand. But this was something new, and it felt wholly foreign and entirely familiar at once. This wasn't a creature from the sands. This was me. I took a deep breath.
My ribs stretched into an endless ache that wrapped around my whole body. I swung my left arm up, the motion ripping a cry out of me, catching the sand arm by the wrist, trying to pretend I didn't feel grains of it slipping between my fingers. Slow as the setting sun, it recoiled into the sand, dragging me up with it. My hand started slipping, and a new sand arm snaked out from the desert, grabbing me. And then another. A dozen hands held me, pulling at my clothes, my arms, pulling me back to the desert. And then I was up, lying flat on my stomach. I crawled away from the edge, my body shaking. I didn't know if it was pain or something greater waiting to crash into me. Something my body knew before my mind. I was blank. Watching without grasping it. Around me, a dozen arms of sand disintegrated. I flinched. Nothing else moved. Not even me. Then I reached toward a heap of sand that had saved my life. I hadn't even touched it before it began to rise toward my palm, like the snakes in baskets called by charmers. So this was the kind of Demji I was. A gun went off. The sand collapsed as I spun toward the sound. The world poured back in around me all at once. There were bodies in the sand already. I was just in time to see Shazad jab her elbow into a man's throat, whirling to catch him in the gut with a knife. A soldier came at her from the right. No! I wasn't empty anymore. I was furious. The sand lashed up, exploding between them, sending them both sprawling. I ran for Shazad as it settled. She was finishing coughing up desert dust when I dropped to my knees next to her. When she saw me, she started hacking all over again. I thought you were dead. I saw you go over. She got out between coughs. I saw you fall. To our right, a gun went up. Without thinking, I flung out my hand. A wave of sand sent the soldier sprawling. Buried him. His gun skittered to my feet. I didn't pick it up. The rush made me feel dizzy and drunk and scared all at once. It was like I'd just grown another limb I wasn't fully in control of yet. I clasped Shazad's hand, pulling her up. I was still shaking too hard to find words. When I turned, the sand at my feet turned with me. I knew it without looking. I felt it. Like I always had without knowing that I was. The desert all around me, the sand like a living thing calling to me, begging me to use it, to be part of it. The fighting had stopped, but I couldn't. Amani! Shazad's grip slipped out of mine. The sand was moving underneath me, a swirl like a tiny sandstorm, and then it was getting bigger, rising, rising until it was all around me, pulling at my hair, my clothes, calling me into it, into the desert, to drown in it. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't control it. There was too much of it. I couldn't breathe. A new hand closed over mine, and this time it was flesh and bone. Jin appeared through the sand, his shima wrapped tightly around his face as he pushed his way through blindly. I saw he was holding something metallic a second before his hand went around me and he pulled me into his chest. He was saying something I couldn't hear over the storm. All I felt was his hand pressed into my arm. It was a bullet, cool and hard, the iron biting into my bare skin. The cold of it cut through the heat in me. The sand dropped away, spiraling down and down and down until it was back under my feet and I could hear Jin's heartbeat under my forehead, feel the pain of the bullet pressing into my flesh too hard, hear him whispering my name over and over again in my ear until I stopped shaking. Chapter 26.
We finally stopped flying a few hours before dawn to let Iz get some rest from carrying the four of us. We were halfway between home and where we'd jumped off the train. It was open, empty desert on all sides, though I could see the mountains of the Devs Valley on the horizon. We didn't unpack supplies or even build a fire. Everyone collapsed where they stood. Iz turned into a huge cat-like beast I'd never seen before and fell asleep. Shahzad leaned against him. Her eyes were red, even though I hadn't seen her crying. Jin sat down next to me without a word. There was something in his hands. The red Shima, I realized. The one I'd let go out the window. He took my right arm, gently, without asking. My hand was swollen and tender, but I'd almost stopped noticing the constant throbbing. Sprained, not broken. The place where my ribs had connected with the canyon wall had faded to a dull ache. I felt Bahi's absence like a badly stitched wound as Jin's hands worked, clumsy with exhaustion, binding my hand with my Shima. He tied it off, his fingers skimming over the cloth before he set my hand down gently.
"You all right?" he asked.
"It'll heal." We both knew that wasn't what he'd been asking, but Jin let it pass anyway.
"Can you shoot left-handed?"
"If I have to," I said. Jin held his pistol out to me.
"Do you want it?"
I stared at the gun in his hands, but I didn't snatch it up like I would have once, yesterday.
"You've worked it out, haven't you?"
"It's because of the iron." I took the gun by the leather handle, careful not to touch the metal. I thought of the way he'd pressed a bullet to my skin as the sand was rising. Just one touch, and I was stripped powerless because of the thing that had shaped my whole life, with or against my will. It was like the Buraki in the metal horseshoes. So long as I had iron against my skin, I couldn't touch my Demji powers. It's the reason I got through my whole life without knowing I was a Denji, because I'm from Dustwalk. The girl who taught herself to shoot a gun, until she could knock down a row of tin cans like they were nothing and the gun was everything. Because I'm the girl with the gun. And Noorsham was the boy from the iron mines. He said he'd been sick. Sick enough to leave the mines and stop inhaling iron dust for a little while, maybe, so that when he went back to work, he did it as a Denji. From the town where even the water tastes like iron. And when they'd been afraid of Noorsham and Fahali, iron was what they'd chained him with. Jin's hand was clenching and unclenching around nothing. His knuckles were torn up, and the motion was making the scabs break all over again. That had to be painful. "Bet you weren't counting on all this being so damn complicated when you abducted me from that godforsaken place."
"I didn't abduct you."
At least he'd stopped punishing his knuckles raw. He realized I was baiting him a moment too late. His shoulders eased. The cautious, angry fragility wasn't something either of us could keep up long. "You abducted me a little bit." It was like we were back with the camel's knees, except there was no more pretending about what I was. I wasn't going to craft illusions out of the air or twist people's minds or change my shape. Those were the powers of Jean in the stories where they tricked men and one another. Then there were the other stories. Maseel and the sand that filled the sea in a fit of genie anger. The golden city of Habaddon burned by the gene for its corruption. Just like Noorsham did. I wondered if I could bury the sea in sand, too. "Norsham's eyes are the same color as mine," I blurted out. I couldn't be the only one who'd put it all together. "He's about my age. He was born spitting distance from where I was." I couldn't be the only one thinking it. Dust walk to Sazi, that's only a few hours as the Buraki rides. How far do you reckon that is as the genie walks? He's my brother, isn't he?
Amani, no matter what he is, he's not your family. Family and blood aren't the same thing.
If that's true, how come you didn't shoot Nagib in Dust Walk?
The truth showed on his face just long enough for me to read it.
I don't want my brother to have to die either, Jin.
We understood each other. His brother and mine were both just the Sultan's weapons.
Jin put his hands on my face.
We don't have to do anything.
He's after the Galen.
You don't have to stop him.
I was so used to Jin's unwavering certainty. The hitch in his voice, the tentativeness of his hand on my face. This was unfamiliar ground.
We could retreat. Live to fight another day.
We'd just be living to die another day.
I leaned my forehead into his.
Norsham, we have to stop him. If the Sultan has a weapon like that, it's only a matter of time before he cuts his way through the foreigners and comes for us, too. We might never get another chance.
I wasn't even sure what I meant by stop him. Kill him? Rescue him? Save him?
They're headed to the Galen camp, I said, and the moment I did, I knew I was right. They're going to kill them. We can get there first.
I'm not that inclined to save any Galen soldiers, Hala interrupted. I've been a Demji in an occupied country longer than you have. They all deserve to burn, if you ask me. We should take care of our own.
And Fahali?
I looked around the group of tired, ragged rebels.
What about all the people there? They're headed back there to burn out the Galen.
A lot of desert folks will burn with them. No one answered me.
We need sleep.
Jin ran his hands over his face. I felt that exhaustion, too. It was soul deep.
Nobody makes smart decisions in the dark. We sleep, and tomorrow we head back to camp. Tell Ahmed about the weapon, and then we decide.
Tomorrow would be too late.
I knew that down in my gut as I lay between the desert and the stars, dead tired and too alive with thought to sleep.
Nobody made smart decisions in the dark, Jin said.
A stupid decision in the dark was how I'd wound up dressed as a boy in Deadshot. I'd make it all over again if I had to. It hadn't even been a decision, really. And neither was this. I was up before I knew for sure what I was thinking of doing. In the light of the embers, I started to pack supplies, enough for a day's walk across the desert.
Running away like a thief in the night?
My gun leapt into my hand.
Shahzad was still leaning against the blue furred beast that was Iz, but her eyes were open now, watching me.
I didn't know how long she'd been awake.
You planning on stopping me?
We both knew she could and that I wasn't going to shoot. Still, I didn't drop my gun right away, even clumsy as it was in my left hand.
He's my brother, Shahzad. It's my responsibility, and I can warn them. Even if I can't do anything else, I can...
I don't want to stop you.
Shahzad pushed herself to sitting.
I'm just offended you didn't ask me to come with you.
Is that the smart thing to do, General? But I could feel the fire taking light in me again, the one that had been trampled by fear and Bahi's loss. And I could see it in Shahzad.
No,
Shahzad admitted.
She reached for her weapons and started buckling the scimitars over her shoulders. The smart thing would be let the Sultan wear himself out fighting his allies and hope that they catch on and kill him,
leaving an empty throne for Ahmed. She tightened the buckle on her second sword.
But Naguib recognized me, so I don't have time to wait around for that. If we don't stop him, he'll send news to the Sultan, and my father, my mother, and my brother will all burn like Bahi. Then he will come for the rest of us. Besides...
She reached a hand for me, and I clasped it, pulling her to her feet.
It's the right thing to do.
I might be tangled with Jin, but with Shahzad it was simpler. We were tied together. She turned to Jin now, sprawled by the fire, his hat pulled over his eyes.
I can tell you're awake. Are you coming with us?
He sighed, tipping his hat backward. Yeah. Just trying to get some sleep before going to near certain death. I think the thieves in the night are meant to be quieter than this, you know, Hala muttered from her side of the campfire.
What exactly is your plan to get us all killed, General?
Simple. We get them to destroy each other. We all stared at her, waiting. It seemed to take her a second to realize she was two steps ahead of the rest of us.
The Sultan might be aiming to drive out the Galen, but he doesn't want open war. That's why he's trying to blame Noorsham's destruction on us. If the Galen soldiers see Noorsham, see that he's the Sultan's weapon and not ours, then open war is what the Sultan will get. He'll lose his alliance with the Galen. And that leaves us with just the Sultan to usurp, not a whole foreign army after us, too. All we have to do is kill Noorsham before he kills them.
Or us, Hala pointed out. So it's five of us against two armies and an insane Demji super weapon. I looked around the circle of faces in the dark.
At Shehabian 2 days ago. God, was it only 2 days? I felt like an imposter. Like a part that didn't quite fit in this rebellion, no matter how much I wanted to. Jin's foolish, blue-eyed bandit who gave up the city without knowing what she was giving it up for. The Demji without powers who couldn't save anyone. But now, standing in this circle, I felt it. The thing that made them all stay and risk their lives. Being a link in the chain.
Yeah, I guess it is, I said.
There's an old expression, Shahzad said.
She might not want to be called General, but it was written all over her. She surveyed her small army, a shapeshifter, a gold-skinned girl, a foreign prince, and a blue-eyed bandit.
About fighting fire with fire. It never made much sense to me, but fighting fire with Demji who don't burn so easily, that might work. Chapter 27 Noorsham was impossible not to see first. Even from far away, I tracked his progress by the sun glinting off the brass helmet with the barrel of the rifle. It was only half a day's walk from the railroad outpost to Fahali. We'd landed on the mountain just after dawn. It was close to noon now, the sun high over the scene. Every once in a while I could just make out Iz's shadow dashing across the mountain face as he circled slowly, waiting for his chance. I tracked the barrel of my gun along from Noorsham through the soldiers. There were a few dozen of them. And there was Naguib. My finger tightened on the trigger.
Not even you can make that shot, bandit.
Jin's voice in my ear eased my finger off the trigger.
He's still out of range.
As soon as my finger was away from the metal of the trigger, the terrifying, dizzying sensation of having an entire desert at my fingertips, ready to rip out of control, rushed back. My powers were still too much of a liability, Shahzad had declared in the end. I didn't know enough about what I was doing to be any kind of help as a Demji just yet. I let out a long breath. Just as I did, Norsham's head swiveled, swinging up toward us. I could swear he looked straight at our hiding place.